This week on the JDM podcast, we're talking about
Mazda trucks,
Lexus again,
and making sushi
because JDM. Anyway, stick around. Jag åkte ner till Stockholm och då fick jag se glänsande Porsche och BMW. Men jag har en kärra som är bättre än då, det är en Volvo 142. So basically, welcome to, again, whatever episode this is now. We're going to get social media set up. It'll be in the description due to the unique way in which I forgot to do it this week. But nonetheless, the links will be in the description, so look around for that. Our room got canceled because that we were going to record in on university because of, I don't know what's going on. I don't know, some people are sick or something. I guess, I really don't know. I haven't heard anything in the news.
I'm sure it's not that big of a deal.
No, it's probably not. But anyway, for some reason our room got canceled, and we have an extra week of spring break, which I have no idea what to do with, and that's what we're doing. But anyway, we're still here. You can still listen to us every Monday.
Yes.
David, go.
We went go-karting.
Oh yeah, we did. That was fun. Even though there's this virus, I don't even know if it's a virus. I think it's just like a way of being that people are not feeling well.
Yeah,
I'm
sure you can just will it away, honestly.
Yeah, I don't even know. I like how we said we're not going to talk about this. The first thing we talked about is like, wait, I wanted to be the one avenue of media entertainment that didn't fucking mention this shit.
No, we're already down the rabbit hole.
I don't know what it's called, though. Mm. I don't know. I think if there's some guy called COVID or something like that. I'm not sure. And he's like 19. Anyway. But David and I went go-karting with some friends. Where did we go?
K1 Speed.
Yeah. It was a lot of fun. And we went in the middle of the day. No one was there. And to cut to the chase, I had the fastest time, so I'm the better man.
Well, yeah. Okay. Well, in my defense, Goble's done much more racing than I have. But yeah, he did go fast. Although
it was not by much.
I mean, it was 0.4 of a second when your fastest lap time was like 16.8 seconds or something like that. So I consider that pretty significant in terms of like racing or whatever. But I will say that on the second, because we did like two races.
Yeah.
On the second race, I matched your lap time for your best time on the first race.
Oh, really?
So that's, I mean, just, but not even really. It was like a thousandth of a second off.
It's fun, though, because I've never been to K1. Time, yeah. I don't know, have you been there before?
No.
And we went to K1 Speed. I don't know if we already said that, but it's basically, it's an indoor go-kart track, but they're electric, and they're really quick. I mean, you sit there, and you stand next to the track, and you go, it's go-karts, but whenever you're like 6 inches off the floor,
it's really fun.
I'm sore from doing it. Like, my arms still hurt. It's been two, three days at this point.
And the steering ratio is like super tight, of course, because you have to, the track is really tight, and there's no power steering because it's a go-kart, so
it's like,
yeah, it's a bit of a workout.
Yeah. And then they're like, they only have rear brakes,
which is awesome, by the way.
Because you can just slide on every corner.
If I wasn't so focused on trying to be fast, I would definitely like try and drift a little more.
I want to go now. This is how they do. This is how they get you. Because now they're like, oh well, it's actually less money if you come back, and then they give you money off, and then
you said it was
what?
Wait, no, 50 races for $100.
Yeah, it's $2 a race.
I mean, $100 is a lot, but you could like,
you could really
Does it have like an expiry time?
I imagine it must, and I also imagine you don't have to do it in one day. If you did,
that would be painful.
Yes, yeah, so that's like I say, it'd be like having a workout. That was a workout for me.
Yeah,
that was it. Like, I don't need to work. I'm good for the year.
No, I am sore from that. Yeah,
and like you just wouldn't expect to be. But then the other thing is like on those 50 races or whatever. You know, you're thinking, like, oh, it's not that long. They're 13 laps, which I was surprised by, because it's kind of long. This place, the one we went to, I don't know if they're different across the board.
I mean, our friend that works there was saying that their track is, like, one of the shortest.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So it's, like, I'm assuming the tracks are longer and other K1 speeds.
Yeah.
But I'm not really sure, because it's the only one I've been
to. Hashtag not ad. It was K1 speed.
Yeah, no, it was just
if they would
time.
Like to sponsor us, though, I mean, by all means, please go for it.
I wonder what electric motors they use for those carts.
Yeah, because it's more than like a golf cart motor, you know?
It feels a little quicker than a golf cart. Yeah. I mean, I've never been in a golf cart. Maybe it's just that it's lighter. I don't know. But I wonder what they use. I wonder if it's something made for them, or if it's just like an off-the-shelf part.
Well, because like,
or with a horsepower on it, it's probably not much. But
it, yeah, it's really probably not much. It's just depending. It's just so small and light. And I guess I mean, I imagine a lot of like timing stuff and things like that would might come down to, you know, how much you weigh or like how much you have for breakfast that morning. Like I wonder how much that actually counts and stuff like that. Because like whenever we do lemons and stuff like that, I'll be faster than some other people because I weigh less than them because they're like actual adults and I'm a child and all this stuff. But like, it's fine. It keeps it competitive. Me trying to raise my dad the whole time and whatever. What else do we do over break? Not necessarily together. Have you done anything else interesting?
No.
We made sushi.
Yeah. We made a lot of sushi.
It doesn't really have anything to do with cars, but nonetheless.
That was good though.
It's Japanese. Cars come from Japan.
Yes. This should be an all Japanese episode. We can't talk about any other car manufacturer.
Shut up, Skyler.
He said yes.
we have a special guest this episode. Yeah. Skyler.
She's in the background. We've got an audience today. An audience of one.
Can I just say that K1 speed needs to be more like Mario Kart?
How so?
Because I got fucking last, and y'all got to do, like, 13 laps, and I did, like, 9 the first
time. Oh, yeah. That is one thing. Lapped me. Yeah, that's one thing about the K1 speed that, like, we didn't realize is, you know, it's 13 laps, but it's 13 laps set by the fastest driver.
Yes.
So, if you do 13 in X amount of time, and then someone's behind, and they're on lap 10, that's it for them. Like, that's it. They end.
They say 13 laps. I think it'd be fair if they, you know, made even the slowest person, they get through 13.
And yeah.
Then, you know.
Because then, I think that would make more sense, because it's like...
I mean, I guess you could exploit it by having one person, like, kind of sit out during the race and go super slow.
Uh-huh.
And then like, all those buddies just, like, go around 60 times, and then he finally finishes, and he's like, okay, now I get to...
Maybe that's why they don't
I feel like people wouldn't do that, though.
I would.
Well, because they'd give you the flag, like, oh, speed up, or whatever.
You go, oh, okay. And speed up a little bit.
Well, they can ban you.
So. They can't, yeah. I mean, they can ban you for the day or forever. I don't know, but there are other go-kart. There's another one that we were thinking about going to that I was going to do. We never ended up doing it, I don't think, but I was going to do it with my racing team and Lemons. But if I remember correctly, it's an outdoor track. It's huge, and the karts do like 70 to 80 miles an hour or something. The thing is, it's like $25 per race or something like that, but I've heard it's definitely worth it.
Yeah, I mean, that sounds like a lot of fun.
Yeah.
But also sounds frightening.
But like in a good way. I don't know.
Because, I mean, like, if they're... I mean, I get the carts are bigger, but if they're, like, still mostly, like, go-kart size and I'm doing 70 in them, that sounds really scary. I mean, it sounds like a lot of fun, but...
Then it would really be like...
I bet there's this really fat waiver that you gotta sign.
Oh, yeah. It's
just, like, pages long.
I mean, like, the waiver you have to sign to just drive your car around some cones for autocross at Texas Motor Speedway is fairly lengthy for what it is. I mentioned that one is like the owner's manual to a car. Like, it's just a big, thick thing.
What's the worst that could happen with autocross?
You get hit by a car, I guess, but, like...
It's only one car out at a time. I guess there's an audience.
It's like one or two, technically. You do get to sit on the side. They do have cone... manager or like okay here's the they have cone managers people sitting on the track. Here's the thing, the reason I don't do autocross anymore, it's just because you pay for a yearly membership, that's fine, you pay per event, it was like $40, it's not terrible. The only thing is, you're there, you have to get there like 8 in the morning, and you're there till like pretty like late in the evening, like fairly, you know, mid late afternoon. You're kind of there for a long time.
Yeah.
And they're all like this because I've done some other ones, and the problem is, and prices vary, but the problem is, they kind of go, okay, cool, everyone. They do a briefing, you know, because they have to. You go through a little safety check. They go, do you have a helmet? Yes. Does your car drive? Yes, I got it here. Cool. And then they put you in a class.
Mm-hmm.
So I think when I was doing it, I had like my E39 015 series and whatever. It was like a straight six. It wasn't a fast car, but it was a normal car. So I got put in the normal car class, whatever it was. Because there was modified stuff there. There's like some crazy Miatas, crazy Corvettes, stuff like that. The problem I have with it all is you're there all day, and you spend all this money, spend for the membership, do all this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You get to go out like 4 to 6 times, like four to six laps, and there's something like...
How long is a lap?
Like an eighth of a mile. The reason is it's just so like everyone can get to go. Cool. The problem is they're all short laps and you're competing for time. They're really short. I get it. It's fun though. I mean, it's entertaining because that car I had was not in the best shape. So, and it had an open diff. So I think at some point I just got bored during the timing of the day because I couldn't, there was no one I could like compete with.
Yeah.
There's no other fives, like nothing like that. So I was like, okay, this is just fun. And then you can have passengers, I think, if they're like of legal age, I have to be like 18, which we ran into an issue with, like, because I did it in high school, and I had friends that were like 17, and then they're not allowed to sign the waiver, and then it's like that whole thing. It's really annoying, but unless they're guardians there or something like that. But anyway, you can have passengers in it, which is fun. I got shown around by a dude with an ST Focus. That was great. I think front wheel drive cars do pretty well on this.
Yeah.
But anyway, as I was saying with my BMW, I just got bored on like one of my things, so I just started drifting the whole thing. And then the announcer just kept going off like, if you want a smoke show, my dad came to one of them and just took a bunch of photos. And there's just all these photos of this kind of like rough, you know, 15-year-old Beamer with just smoke pouring off the back tires, and they were like super hard eco tires because it's all I could afford, and
that's hilarious.
All this stuff. It's fun, but you
at
just
at least they let you do that. I mean,
yeah, that's what I thought. I thought I was gonna get like written up for it, and then I was like, and the thing is, they are kind of fastidious about stuff like that. They're like, well, like don't have fun a little bit, which kind of annoys me. It's that kind of attitude. But then the other half of the day, though, you're standing outside in the middle of the Texas heat. Other states are available, but anyway, you're standing out there in the middle of the Texas summer where it's like 100 degrees, just standing next to some cones. That way, if someone drives by and hits it, you have to go put the cone back. And the thing is, you're forced to do this. Like, you have to do X number of that, X number of that. It's very, like, communistical socialist thing. It just annoys me that you pay this much money to do this, you don't get to drive that much.
Where's the money going?
I have no idea. Because it's like all they have there.
Do they get new cones every time?
No, they don't. They're not even SCCA's cones. They're like the tracks or places cones. Because I know they do a lot of police stuff there for training. So
I
they
guess they have to cars. Rent out the place. So
true.
That's an amount of money.
But you know, there's a slew of old malls here in North Texas that are desolate. Just go do it there. Do it on your own without anyone else.
Actually, yeah. That's...
It's just that
this like, is our consumer advice of the show.
Yes, because we
just
done
buy your own cones and just find a field somewhere and do autocross there.
That's like when we went to, let's just say, an undisclosed location in the country, and there were all those big gravel sloping roads, and I had my Gen Coupe, and we were trying to do drifting on it, and it was
stole that video.
Oh my gosh, that
it's
was
hilarious.
Like, went off the road at some point.
Yeah, you can tell when there's a lot of panic in the car.
There's like four people in the car, everyone's screaming. Because, you know, as much as I'd like to think I've got the driving prowess of, like, Michael Schumacher, I really don't. I'm just trying to pretend to be, like, Takumi or something, sliding around in a Gen Coupe.
I know it's fun.
But the thing, it was hilarious. But the problem with SCCA is that whole kind of attitude they have, and they're real kind of, like, anal about stuff you don't really need to be super anal about, and it's not very fun.
Right.
Because of that, that's where Lemons came from.
Okay.
Because the guys who started that didn't like that attitude, and they go, we're going to have fun.
Mm-hmm.
$500, put safety stuff in it, we'll double check everything, and then you just race for as long as the car runs, basically.
Nice.
And then another thing I saw, because I follow a lot of the Lemons, I haven't raced in so long, hopefully I can get back to them once I graduate, which cannot come soon enough. But anyway, they post like social media. They've got a fair amount of social media, which we will too have soon, hopefully. Links in description. That's what I'm going to say. Links in description.
Wait, yeah, now you're committed to it. Unless you cut it out and post.
No, I'm going to do it. Okay, yeah, and then with the social media, what we'll probably start doing is putting like photos or stuff we've looked up or talked about, so you can kind of like look at it.
Mm-hmm.
And it'll probably be posted beforehand. So, hey, you want to see what we're talking about? See if you can figure it out by the photos, but. That's kind of our best way to get the audio podcast. We may do some video stuff in the future, but I might put that video of the drifting on there.
Yeah,
I don't know.
I can get that to you.
Okay, cool.
I'll try and find it.
We'll see if we can work that out. But yeah, anyway, but the Lemon stuff came from there, and then I was looking at their social media, and they there's a team that brought like a Hyundai Elantra from like the mid-90s,
yes.
And they were just renting it out to people whose cars had broken.
Oh.
Yeah. Because you, nice. They're like, yeah, I'll do that. That's a good idea. I haven't seen any other teams do it, but normally they'll bring a
second.
Rental
car.
Yeah, it's a rental, race-ready, crap Lemons car. And I just like that attitude.
That's
so
really
much.
Funny. That's,
yeah.
That's a good business model right there.
Because ours
maybe
is...
not good, but...
Yeah, I mean, okay. We've got a couple of cars now, and then we've kind of paired with another team, because I think our stock includes the Toyota Solera, which I mentioned last week.
Mm-hmm.
Absolute gem of a car. That thing's honestly really fun now. It's got a hell of a lot of modifications on it now. Just a bunch of like Lexus parts basically to make it stop. But then we did that, and then we also have a Ford Escort ZX2 automatic, which because all the women on our team, they go, we want our own car. And then we found this thing. It was like a friend of a friend's getting rid of it. He had it for years. It was like his son's car. And they were just like, we want that car. So they took it, and then they painted it like a cat. It's got these spring-up folding ears on the top, and they call it the Pussy Wagon. That's like, nice. they were like, we want our own car, and we're going to call it this. And then we've got like a Honda Civic that's getting built. There's an Eclipse somewhere, an older Honda Civic, some other stuff. It's very interesting. And then, you know, if the Solera breaks, we have a whole other car in the back lot, so it'll be ready. David, talk about something interesting.
All right. This is like a while ago. I was thinking about Mazda trucks.
Yeah.
And like how it seems like they don't make any anymore.
Yeah.
And so they had, I guess it looks like their own trucks for a while before they like partnered with Ford and started doing that whole thing. Cause so their whole like B series is basically a Ranger.
Yeah.
I can't say basically, it is a Ranger. But then let's see, I think they actually had like a new truck that wasn't sold here, but that was also like the new Ranger that we also didn't get here.
Well, what, until now? Because we have it now. Is that what
we have it now?
Yeah.
Maybe the Mazda one will come out.
Okay, I think it's funny how the old ones, if I remember correctly, the old ones Mazda built, Ford put their badge on it. Now I think it's the other way around.
I believe that's right as well.
Yeah.
Which is just kind of interesting how that happens.
It's all the little Euro trucks.
Here we go. The Mazda BT50. I don't know if you've seen that before.
What is that?
I know.
That looks good, though. I've never seen that.
Yeah, I mean, I believe it's just the Ranger, but it's like Mazda now.
Yeah.
I want to say.
Well, then the problem with the reason we don't have small trucks like that is the whole import tax on them and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. It's the second generation Ranger has been designed by Ford Australia with a Mazda derivative sold as the BT50.
So, yeah, it's the other way around, then.
Yeah.
That's great. I like how that's come full circle.
I know. It's pretty funny. What, although, okay, so this second generation, it says 2011 to 2020.
Uh-huh.
So it seems like they're still making it.
Yeah.
But it says, like, till 2020. Does that mean that they're going to stop? Maybe there'll be a new one.
Well, there might be. The only thing, the Ranger that we just got here, as far as I know, is like an older design that they've been making over there for years, but they go, we're going to reintroduce it.
Yeah,
so we'll probably keep making it for a while, but I don't know if they're going to keep making the Mazda one. But it might be like some other cars that we've had in the U.S. where they get it here, and it's like the older generation, because Chevy does that. Because before they sold Opel and Holden and all those subsidiaries, Opel made the Astra, or Vauxhall Astra, it's the same car, which was a hatchback. And then they came out with the new one overseas, took the old one, brought it here, and called it the Cruise Hatch.
Yeah.
And made it ugly, unfortunately, to me. But like, you know, they can only do so much, but I'm pretty sure that's the same car.
Anyway, so I thought that was kind of interesting.
That is cool.
Where am I going with this? I mean, in like the mildest way, interesting. It's like that there's this Mazda truck. Mazda trucks are pretty legendary in my mind, because they start with the whole Beer series, which had kind of its own reputation around here. Although I feel like people here know the Ranger so much more than they know the B series, even though the B series was the origin of all of that.
And then even better Mazda trucks was the old rotary one.
Yeah, I was just thinking about the same thing. So, for people that don't know, this was like before the B series, and it was just, I thought the rotary pickup that they had was actually its own model that just came with the rotary engine, but it was not. Apparently there was other engines in it.
It
was just an engine option,
but
it was a pretty famous one. But I was like, why, in my mind, when I heard that, I was like, why the rotary? I mean, I get it, it's like their thing, that's pretty cool, but
in a truck.
Yeah, I'm like, rotaries, I feel like, are known for having high horsepower, but pretty low torque, which is like the opposite of what you want in a truck. And I was like, why would you put this in a truck? But looking at like the horsepower and torque and stuff, here you go. 110 horsepower, and I believe it was 117 pound-feet of torque. And you're like, that surprised me, because I was like, 117 is actually more than the horsepower number.
Yeah.
I expected it to be the other way around. And then, because the other engines that were in this, that are in that generation, were just absolutely tiny, It was actually like the more powerful, more torquey version, which I kind of didn't expect.
I've never heard of a quote unquote torquey rotary.
I know, it doesn't make any sense, but like there, like the big engine that came in that like generation that the rotary pickup was a 1.8 liter, and it made 98 horsepower.
That's a big Well, yeah, it's a bigger rotary because it.
Wait, what? No, that's just a. That's an inline four.
Oh.
So that was like the big inline four. It went from 1.3 liter inline four to the 1.8 liter inline four, and then there's a 1.3 liter rotary as well. So it was like the rotary was like the creme de la creme.
So that was the best engine.
That was the best engine.
Oh, wow. I didn't know.
Weirdly, yeah. I'm like, oh, they made other ones with other engines. There was probably something that was like more torquey, but it's not as popular because, of course, it's not a rotary.
Yeah.
But no, that was like the one to have, apparently, which is super weird. Wow,
I would never have expected that. Maybe it's just because of the era or something. That's
cool. Yeah, it was really advantageous to get the rotary one, and I'm surprised it didn't like make it do better. But I guess at that point, the regular piston engines just started getting better, and they got outpaced and all that.
What year did that truck come out?
This was 65 to 77.
Oh, that's a lot older than I thought. Why then, because I mean, GM was going to throw a rotary in like the Vega or something for a minute, and then they completely axed the project, but you know, to each their own. That was the hip new thing, you know, like now with what would be the equivalent of like
rotary engines,
fringe technology now. Still the rotary engine.
I mean, hybrids are far too common.
Yeah.
I mean, Mazda with their Sky Active, they're kind of doing that again, and they might hopefully bring back the rotary. How likely do you think that is?
I don't know, because they just put that patent out for a straight six version of their Sky Active for their new. I don't know. It's not going to be called an RX, but some new coupe thing.
Oh.
I don't know if that's going to happen, but like I hope it does. It'd be pretty cool. Regardless of if it's not, you know, a rotary or not. But I don't know if we're going to see another RX car in the near future or ever.
The emissions are so terrible. Like,
that's the problem. Just, yeah.
I just don't think they can get by regulators. Even with all this Sky Active stuff, you're still, like, burning oil. And, you know, I just don't think there's a way to get around that.
Unless there's some way, if they do, like, the whole cafe thing where they have to have the... You know, not industry average, but it's a corporate average fuel economy thing. If they're able to do so well with their Sky Active tech that they can release a rotary, then maybe
that would be cool.
That's what they're doing. They've been doing it all along. They're plotting.
Yeah, no, exactly. That's why they've been pumping out
RX,
the Mazda 3s and stuff. Yeah,
I do hope though if they do come out with it, it does kind of go past the old one. Like the RX-8, I like, and a lot of people don't. But I kind of what I want to see is like a new RX-7.
The thing is, the RX-8, like, for being naturally aspirated, it made so much power.
Yeah.
Like, it's kind of, the later gen RX-7s or any, like, modified turbo RX-7 can make, like, a billion horsepower because they're really easy to port and, you know, put more boost in them. And, I understand. But if you're just looking at, like, a stock RX-7, you know, like a later generation one, even the twin turbo one, compared to a naturally aspirated RX-8, it's like, yeah, it's going to make more power, but not by that much.
Yeah.
And it's like, the RX-8 actually made quite a bit of power for being naturally aspirated. And if you compare that naturally aspirated rotary, the Renesis, to the naturally aspirated rotaries that were in the RX-7s previously, it's like a mile difference.
Yeah, it's no competition.
It's insane how much development and how good they got that for the RX-8. I mean, ultimately, it still wasn't enough.
Yeah.
But I feel like... I feel like the Renesis doesn't get that much appreciation.
I really like them. Like, I still really want one of those cars.
Yeah. No, they're
the
really
only
cool.
problem is, it's like I mentioned, I've got a diesel Golf. That thing's sort of bulletproof for the time being, at least. And it's like, I don't know if I could, not currently in my life. If I had, you know, if I were employed and not a student, it might be different. But like, it's one of those things where I don't want to have to work on it all the time. Or, like, another thing we did, this kind of leads into this. Well, another thing I did over break is I drove from Dallas all the way to Marfa, Texas, and then down to Presidio, and then back up to Marfa, and then back to Dallas in one day. That's a lot on a car. And, you know, my car did well. Me and a friend went to go see the Prada Marfa because we learned about it in high school. It's basically a semi-fake Prada store in the middle of absolutely nowhere in very, 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 very west Texas, basically on the border. And then you go from Marfa straight south, and then you can get to... on the border, and then you can drive through Presidio, and it was really cool, and we did all that. But the thing is, it's like, if I did that in an RX-8, I'm not sure I'd be as comfortable as I was, you know? But then again, like, I don't know, it's a fairly modern car, it'd probably be fine. It would have sucked a lot more gas than my car did, you know, obviously.
It'd be pretty insane. I mean, because you're going to be traveling at speed, I don't know if cooling will be an issue.
Mm-hmm.
But it's, I don't know. I would say maybe the carbon buildup, because you're supposed to rev the crap out of them, and if you're already just like...
Yeah, that's the thing, because I had a teacher in high school, she had an RX-8, and she was a physics teacher, and she was really into it because of the engine. Like, she goes, I bought this car because it has this engine, it's unique, and she thought it was great.
Of course, a physics teacher, that's
funny. I know, it's like, it would be. The thing is, she also was like, I asked her, you know, because I was interested, I was like, it's cool.
Yeah.
I think she said, oh, well, I got an automatic one, and all this stuff, and I was like... I don't know if she still has it. I haven't been back to my hometown. This was like 6 years ago that, you know, I knew about this. I don't know if she still has it, but she bought like, I think she told us, the class, she said she bought the last version of it. She got the nicest one she could before they stopped making them.
Nice, yeah.
And then she bought the automatic one because I think it was automatic. From what I remember, it was an automatic just because she said like, I don't want to deal with it. But then she also might have been an enthusiast. So I'm not sure, but as far as I remember, she said it was an automatic, and I wonder how that car is still doing today, because it was the later one, and they fixed a lot of the engine management issues.
Yeah,
with regards to oiling and stuff like that so it doesn't blow apart.
I don't know what year it was, but again, consumer advice: if you're going to buy an RX-8, from what I know, I would recommend that later generation when they facelifted it, because they also, that first generation had oiling issues, and they added. If it was caught on to early enough, the first generations are fine, because you can get them, I believe, at dealerships, they could flash them and have them just, like, put a bunch more oil because of that oiling issue. But on the later gens, they had, like, an extra oil distributing thing, and then it was fine right from the factory. But not all those first generation cars got reflashed with the stuff, and so, you know, you could be buying a car that... maybe it runs, but it's like really on its last leg if you're buying a first generation one.
If you're gonna buy any of them though, really go get a compression check, or if you know how to do it, just do it. And if the owner says something about it, like, oh, you don't need to do that, just go buy another one. Like, because it's so worth doing that to any of those cars.
No, really, it's kind of sad that it has to be done, but it really does, especially since like most of the ones I see on Craigslist and stuff, it seems like they're all at 120,000 miles.
Yes.
120, like,
yeah.
There's a huge. I mean, there are some with less, there are some with more, but it feels like the big bulk of them is 120,000 miles. I think the people who drive them realize, like, I can't drive this anymore, or it's gonna break. I need to get rid of it before this gets expensive.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, they probably sit there for a while because people know and they don't want to buy them.
The thing is, though, that's really good, because I was looking around because I found it was a first gen one. It was one of the later years, so it might have been done, you know, reflashed. They might have done that to it. But it was a manual, which is normally good for longevity on those engines.
Yeah.
But it was also, like, it only had 40 or 60,000 miles, and it was fairly well priced. It was mostly priced because of the age, you know, it's just an older car.
Yeah.
So I was like, I was considering it, and then, you know, I could go get a compression check and all this stuff. But the thing is, I then thought, okay, worst case I do buy this, the rest of the car is pristine. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to just go, oh, you know, can't afford it, whatever, got to get rid of it just because of the engine. So I looked up an engine... like a new, you know, a short block, I don't even know what they call them, but a new basically Renesis remanufactured one.
Yeah.
Or you can send in yours as like a core kind of thing and then get another engine back. And I want to say it was within the area of like $1,500. Now then, you'd have to put it in yourself.
Yes.
And if you can do that, like I've done that before on cars, like I've done engine swaps. I know it's something I could do. And I was like, that's really not that much money. To me, it depends on like what your kind of outlook is, because if you're not that into the car and the car is only worth so much because of mileage or whatever and the engine goes, yes, I could see you just going, oh, get rid of it.
Yeah.
But if you wanted like a cool, nowadays kind of a rare, you know, I mean, it really is, it's the only rotary car like that that's fairly new, but if you wanted this kind of rare you know, enthusiast car and you were into it, go buy one that's on its last legs, that's nice, and just replace the engine, you know, go through the suspension, clean up anything else, and for not that much money, you can have a very, very nice new engine, because the only problem with the cars was the engine. As far as I know, the rest of the car is fine. Yeah, like, I mean, Mazda makes their quality items on the whole, apart from the, you know, Apex seals. But if you go get that done, then you can get it ported, you can do all this other stuff to it and really make a cool car.
Yeah.
And I think that's something, like, that's something I've thought about, like, I think I want to do that. Mm-hmm. As much as I've been saying, like, yeah, I'm probably going to buy another Gen Coupe, number three, like, in a year or two, I'm kind of also saying you could save a bunch more money, and I've always wanted an RX-8.
I want to own a rotary car at some point in my life. I think it's something that needs to happen, just because they are so different and, like, interesting and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like they'd be easy to rebuild because there really are not that many moving parts.
No, it's like a sandwich with two pita breads in it.
Yeah. It's like, for those that don't know, it's camming it. Or, like, it doesn't have cams.
No.
But what would be the equivalent to changing, like, your cam shaft, like, lift and duration? You take a Dremel, and you literally, like, Dremel out this, like, pattern.
The port,
to,
right, yeah.
Increase the size of the exhaust port, or increase the size of the intake port, or even add, like, a new place for the intake port to go. And, I mean, they have, it's hilarious, you can print out paper that you then glue on to the side of your, like, block. Once you know take those two rotors apart, you, like, glue onto the side, and then it has the outlines of how big you need to make the port, and you take your Dremel and you just Dremel out your port, and you got a new cam.
Yeah, and
essentially,
it sounds really cool when you do that too, because there's a bunch of different kinds. Like, there's the bridge port, which I know you have to have because it has a bridge in it, because otherwise it's, like, too big of a hole and stuff like that. And
I don't know all the names, but I know there's, like, essentially stages of tuning, and the higher you get up in those stages, the more fuel it's going to use.
Obviously,
the worse it's going to be at low RPM, but the more choppier it's going to
sound. That's what I was going to say, and that's where you get the, like, rotary chop, V8s have.
It's crazy to me with rotaries, because it feels like they make noise, like, only a third of the time when they're ported that much. They just, like, have a burst, and then it sounds like it, like, free spins, and they have another burst. They sound super bizarre, but it's really cool.
I wonder how hard it would be to put some kind of forced induction on one of the Renesis ones. I know someone must have done it and worked it out.
I'm sure it's been done, but
they're not really built from the factory, the old 13Bs.
I think it's terribly common.
That's a thing. And then they already make a fair amount of power, and you can get more power just by porting it and messing with, you know, your ECU settings.
I think the thing is the RX-8, because it had such, like, higher compression to get that more power, even if you could put boost in it, you wouldn't be able to put much. I don't know how much it'd be worth
apart.
It. And I don't know what it'd be like reducing compression on a rotary engine to try to, like, I don't know how you would even go about that.
You buy one with 100K and you put a turbo on it.
Yeah, there you go.
Because they have no compression, fix the compression.
See, that's actually what you should do. Just buy, just make sure the Apex seals are blown. Make sure it has really sloppy compression, and then put a turbo on it.
Yeah. It'll be fine.
There you go.
That's what you do, yeah. Exactly. Don't worry about any kind of combustion chamber blow-by. It just won't matter. It doesn't, you know, it's not even going to be a problem when you're bending rotors or something insane.
You know, eventually the you know, everything will just turn to mush, and it'll be like a turbine engine
where
it just flows through.
It's like some kind of weird turbine nuclear reactor car or something ridiculous like that. Oh my gosh.
I wonder how much the Renesis will bolt up to, like, a previous, like, a RX-7 transmission or something.
That's a good question, because I, like you, like the original RX-7, and I think they're cool, but they're slow, and if you put that engine in there, it'd be very, very quick.
That would be very cool. I worry, because that is a pretty big generational, like, jump, because I had the 12A.
That's like 30 years.
Yeah, that was... I mean, it might still fit. There was, like... There's definitely cars where things like that still fit, but I just don't know.
I was gonna say, to be honest, that's such an old car, and it's so mechanical and, like, lack of computer stuff, that'd be one of those things where you just get an RX-8 and then basically reshell the whole wiring harness, the whole car, basically, into the other one. Because that's something, like, I think is, like, the best way to do a swap on some certain cars, especially if they're older.
Because
I talked about, I don't think I mentioned it on this podcast, but I talked about, like, I really, really like the old pre-3 Series E21, mm-hmm. or sorry, pre-E30 BMW 3 Series. It was called the E21. It was the first... 3 Series when they went to that kind of 3, 5, and 7 moniker, because it was BMW's new class, I think they called it. But I really liked those, and there was never an M3 version. And then I was looking at kind of like what you could put in it and stuff like that, and I think something I really thought about doing was, well, why don't I just go buy like a rolled over or something, you know, 230i, you know, if I can find a manual, whatever, from, you know, a Copart, yeah, and then just swap everything over, and then, you know, the really at that point, if the diff will take it in the original car, put that in there. If not, you know, modify yourself to put the rear diff from the other one in there. And then the biggest issue at that point you really have is just going to get a drive shaft made, which really isn't that much money because there are little indie shops all over big cities. I mean, like here, I think I've done it one time, or I did it with like my dad or someone I know, like when I was young, like had to do that, and it really isn't that much money, and they know what they're doing, and you can get it done, and then you've got your bespoke kind of custom car. But like stuff like that is something I really kind of want to try to get into, but I think that could be cool to do with an RX-8.
Wrestling mods are pretty rad.
Yes.
Sorry, I'm just on a forum right now because I was like wondering if people put them in the FBs. People tend to forget that a Renesis is, this is a, from a forum post, that the Renesis is just a 13B like any other, thus your tranny will bolt up and your current clutch / flywheel setup is compatible. So it seems like it'd work.
And it's then the same.
The post below, the oil pan is longer than a 13B, so you could use two 12A pans and splice them together.
Wow.
I feel like it's not quite just a bolt-in.
Yeah.
But it seems like it does bolt up.
That's, you know what I mean? That's, I know, but that's like half the battle.
Yeah, I mean, it is. But
like, that's the biggest thing on trying to get stuff to work together. It's like those people who put, you know, manual transmissions and Jag XJSs, or that video I showed you with a Ford Taurus. Someone was like, I want a manual one. And like the later ones, the really ugly ones, you know. Yeah. They're like, oh, I'm going to put a manual in it. And they found one out of a Ford Probe, and that fit. And then
what's been done before and I love to see is the like SC400s and LS400s, when they put manuals in those.
Yeah.
Because I think that really like livens up those cars.
Yeah.
Because those engines are pretty good, but I feel like it kind of lets them down that they just have really normal automatics in them.
Yeah.
And they make kits for that. It's a little expensive, but I mean, if you want that kind of thing, it's out there.
Yeah, it's one of those things, like I said, it's like if a rotary Mazda is your thing, then it's fine if you spend a little bit more money on it, like you're into it, you know, just hold on to it. And if you love more than anything else a Lexus SC400, just put a manual into it. Because I know you, and I agree with you on this, it's like, I think the 400's better than the 300. Oh, he said something negative about the 2J's, 1JZ, like whatever.
Is the 2J.
It's
a naturally aspirated 2J. They did have a turbo 1J in Japan.
Yeah, and then at that point, just get a Supra.
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
Since it's the same car as the SC. And then
the people get the SCs because they can't afford the Supras.
Yeah.
Oh, some people. I mean, I can't say everybody. I think the SC stands on its own because I like that it had a V8, and I think that's super neat.
Yeah.
I get why you would want the 2JZ, like even just the natural aspirated one. It's a respectable engine, and it's definitely like super durable. But so is the 1UZ.
Yes.
And it's like, I mean, I don't know. Don't try to copy a Supra because it's not a Supra.
No, yeah. I could get it. You want to do it up like a Sora? That's cool. Like, because that's what that was. And I thought about doing that. But it's just, to me, it's like, if you want a Supra, go get one. Well, they're stupid expensive now because people are insane. But other than that, you know, I think it's cool because it's different. Mm-hmm. Don't buy them. Just don't buy them because I want the prices to stay cheap.
Yeah,
Don't start buying them.
Keep the SC300 cheap, please.
Just, it's a horrible car. I don't think you'll like it. Don't bother. Buy the 400, though.
There is enthusiasts like manual cars, and the SC300 did come with a manual in the States, but it's exceedingly rare.
I found one too.
Yeah,
and it was a lot of money.
The one that I found was not, because it was awful. The engine apparently was in pretty good nick, but the paint was just shit.
Wait, what color
was
it?
Was shit. I don't even remember. It was probably the primer color.
Oh. I just went because I found one a long time. It was like 2 or 3 years ago. I don't know if you remember this. I was getting rid of, I think, my BMW, and I had a bunch of cars lined up, because the problem is, like, I only have one car.
Yeah.
And I didn't have a spare, and none of my family had a spare, so I was, like, trying to, like, get the swap done quickly. Mm-hmm. I think it was you, or it might have been Sato or something. I was talking to like three different people on the phone trying to get a car sorted. And one of them was a guy who had a manual SC300.
Mm-hmm.
The problem was it was like, it was for what it was as a car. Like, I understand, like, you know, certain things are more money. I get it. But it's just like, at the base level of it, what you're getting is a kind of ratty SC300 for twice the price it should be just because it has a manual.
Yeah.
And you know that with the age and the mileage in that car, you're going to have to do some work to get, like, bushings and linkages and stuff and make it actually tight. And it was... I know Lexus is good and stuff like that, but I walked on it because I was like, it's realistically not the kind of car I want for that much money.
Maybe you looked at the same one that I did. This is before I bought the Fiesta. I was looking for another car, and I went there with my dad. And I mean, he was definitely like super against it, but I was like, that'd be pretty sweet.
Well, you went and actually looked at it.
Yeah, I went and looked at it, and I mean, they had done a bunch of stuff for like the seals and whatever, so apparently like it was squeaky clean as far as like leaking oil goes, and like you know, like mechanically it was good. The transition was apparently fine, although the shifter was super sloppy.
Yeah,
like sloppier than anything. I was like, it didn't feel like you were in any gear because of how sloppy it was. But you know, that's just a bushing. It's not a big deal.
Yeah.
But the paint was just so bad, and the interior was so bad.
It was the same kind of thing.
I was like, it's neat, but really, like,
I'm not going to spend this much money that I'm going to have to do, end up doing this much work, too. And it's like, yes, you will end up with something that's very cool, very unique, but it's not a Supra, it's not a GTE. Like, it's still just a naturally aspirated 2J.
Yeah.
It's cool, and it's quick, but if you're going to spend money like that, and you want a 2J like that, go buy an IS, because it's going to be more fun. Even though it's a four-door sedan, you know, and that kind of thing, it might not be as cool or whatever. It's lighter. It kind of fits the car more.
I think the IS is just as cool as the SC, personally. I think it looks
better. I think the weak one's the GS.
The GS?
Yes.
Yeah.
Because it looks like that dude from Lilo and Stitch.
I mean, so does the SC a little bit.
Yeah, but the SC is like, I don't know, it's lower. It fits the car better.
Yeah.
I don't know what they were doing with the original GS. Well, not the original one, the OG one they only made for a couple years. Those you see every once in a while. They look like an old, like, 300ZX Nissan a little bit. But anyway, the one after that, they're like, yeah, y'all know what we're talking. It's got the four separate headlights like a Mercedes, but they just did it in a weird way. And I don't think they didn't age well, but I don't think they aged well either. It's just, like, its own thing on the side.
I found it... Yeah.
They stick out for some reason.
It really... I found it kind of interesting, because, like, as far as, like, enthusiast Lexus cars go, you can compare them to, like, the BMW equivalents. The IS is the 3 Series, the GS is the 5, and the LS is the 7.
Yeah.
But it's, like, if you look at what enthusiasts like on the BMW lineup, it's going to go 3, 5, 7.
Yeah,
pretty much every time. With 5, like, closer to 3, and 7, like, people, I mean, aren't super into them, as far as, because they're, you know, real big and luxurious. But if you look at the enthusiast market for the Lexus, it goes IS, LS, and then GS.
Yeah.
I feel like the LS gets chosen before the GS as an enthusiast car, which I think is odd, but... I think the only reason is because the LS actually looks really good, while the GS does not look
good. Yeah, I think that's a big part of it. I think it's
just the looks.
Because the GSs are cool. Like I said, I mentioned it before.
They're one of probably my neighbor lighter. They're like, they came with the same engine lineup, they're probably going to be a little faster.
Yeah.
And it's like, why isn't this, you know, as liked as the LS? And I'm like, oh yeah, it's disgusting.
Look at it, yeah.
Not disgusting, but it just...
I'd have one. I've seen some people do them. I've actually... All credit where credit's due. I've seen some people do some up, and they look good.
Yeah.
Like, genuinely good. But the thing is, it's like, the amount of work you have to do to get it there, and then it's like, like, you know, it's like, you know, again, one of those things, are you really going to dump this much money on, like, a Lexus?
Yeah.
Like, if that's your thing, if that is your favorite car, go for it.
Yeah.
But I don't think... I don't know if a lot of people do that. Because, I don't know, I feel like I've got this thing where it's like, I don't know what my favorite car is, because I've gone through so many, as we talked last time. I'm really into the Golf, but right now. I'll keep going. That brings me up to the thing. I really still want a mid-sized, like, compact or mid-sized four-door sedan that's got a decent amount of power, that's a manual transmission. And we looked it up, and the only ones you can buy now are a Subaru and then a Genesis G70. And I don't want a Subaru, which means the Genesis. Now that I like Genesis...
If you add rear-wheel drive to that, you can't get the
Subaru. That's the thing, and that's what it is, because I want to be able to slide around corners when I'm bored and stuff like that.
It's just the Genesis.
And it makes a good amount of power. It's like 250 or 260 or something like that. You only get the 2-liter. And I think it's good value for money, even new. But then no one else really does that anymore, because BMW doesn't do it with the 3 Series anymore. Not in the States.
If you want
in Europe, in Europe, you have to get like a 1.6 diesel. And it's not really the mood I'm going for with a 3 Series. Yeah. The Giulia doesn't. It's an 8-speed auto. It's the same thing as the BMWs, I think. Which is cool. I really like it, but it's like...
It's not that thing.
So then you have to go in the used market. And then there's a Lexus IS, which I think is really cool, and I know you always bring that up.
Good luck finding a manual one.
That's the problem.
They're so rare. And like I feel like most of the manual ones I find are someone swapping in a manual, and who knows what you're in store for.
Yeah, doing it very poorly.
Yeah, I just,
especially on the first gens, because actually the one I meant, it seems easier to find the second gen ones.
It does.
They're always 250, so you have to deal with a smaller engine, but it's still a good amount of power.
I'd get that. Yeah.
They're really not, and you can find some that are really nice, and manuals are more difficult to find, but I've had a lot more luck. It seems like every time I go on Craigslist or even cars.com or something, you can always find at least one or two, maybe five if you're like good over a big area.
Yeah.
But the original one I found, you find one every month maybe.
Yo,
and they're trashed.
Oh yeah. No, and I mean they're going to sell for so much because it's,
yes, like people are, into it.
As far as like that'd be in my opinion that's like one of my favorite Lexuses to buy, that IS 250 with a manual. The IS 300 with a manual is also like super awesome, but again, like almost impossible to find.
Yeah,
to the point
rare.
Where I kind of just give up.
Yeah.
Because you're going to find it and it's going to be a piece of shit.
Yes.
Because they trash on it or it's going to be really expensive because they're one of the few people that doesn't go super hard on it.
At that point, do you really want to spend $12,000 on a 20-year-old Lexus that you're going to have to keep, maintain stuff? So
if I were to put money in a Lexus, I would do either an SC400 with a manual swap. Just find like a really nice one that's been taken care of. Manual swap, that'd be super awesome. Be kind of like a muscle car, personal luxury car.
There's some cool videos of them. They're very good.
I think that'd be very fun.
Yeah.
Or a
Japanese Mustang.
Or a an IS300, but you take the blacktop beams, 3SGE engine and transmission, get it from Japan and put that in and make your own like RS. 200 or import one even.
Yeah, if it gets to that point. I mean, I think they came out in 98. We googled it, so what's that? A couple more years.
Yeah, and then you'll be able.
More years is it?
98. What was it? 95?
3 more years.
Yeah,
3 more years.
So maybe
quick
that.
Math.
But you can, if you want it now, and if you want it perhaps in a newer, in like a later model IS, you could do that and just import it. Looking online, from what I've seen, those engines don't go for that much, surprisingly, even though they're really like good engines. And I think why I do that over the those made like a lot of power. They made like 200 horsepower, as did the naturally aspirated TJZ. Okay, it made like a little more, like 10 more horsepower. It also made a lot more torque, the TJZ. I get it. It's going to be faster, probably, than that Beams 3SGE. But it's going to be way cooler, I think, to have like a super like buzzy inline four in your IS. And it'd be really unique, and it'd be really good on gas, and I think it'd be the perfect like fun commuter car.
Yeah, that'd actually
be comfortable
really
enough because it's a Lexus. It'd be fun enough because of this interesting engine that it has.
And it's a good chassis too. And theoretically, if you're taking two cylinders off the length, it should be lighter in the front. You might get better weight distribution.
It'd probably handle better.
Yeah, because it would move the weight like more and more.
That's a very light engine too.
Yeah.
As far as like four cylinders go,
and you could put the Altezza logo on it or whatever RS200, and it not be a fake one.
Yeah, and also like, don't put on the disgusting Altezza tail lights on that.
Oh yeah,
I don't know why that became a trend, but it did for a while.
Yes, the early 2000s was a whole slew of Lexus is setting the design trend now out of nowhere. Let's do this to all of our tuner cars.
It's
every car in Fast and Furious.
It's like that clear, like see-through. I don't even know what it is.
Yeah,
it just looks weird. It looks like a little toy car.
Yeah, It's something I do on automation again. Like just I get that that's looks like funny.
The proper JDM one, you know. Yeah. I get that's like, but I mean, who cares? I think yeah. I think they look ugly.
Yeah.
But you know.
And then the Supra had that kind of style for a while anyway too. Mm. Toyota was just doing their own thing, and you know they still do. This has been another episode of us talking about Lexus for most of it. I've just realized.
Well, you know, that's the brands that we like.
Apparently, that is it. Maybe maybe I'm going wrong with Hyundai, but you know. Anyway, this has been us again talking about Lexus for the millionth time, it seems. I don't know if we've done it every episode, but hey, it's whatever. Looks like once we graduate, we're both going to do that or something like that because they're cheap and they're good. But anyway, thank you very much for listening. I'm Jacob.
I'm David.
And we'll catch you next week.
Stay tuned for social media.
Goodbye. Min Volvo 142.